is Elaine Rosen and Andy Weiss recording the second interview with Kitty Gutenberg for the Oral History Project, Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women. We're here, the date is October 29th, 1985. And we're going to continue a little bit, Kitty, with going on with what the question we asked you. We're going to know a little bit about some of the early days of your marriage, of your health, and how you, what part you played in his career with the labor movement.
I would say I saw my, I understood my role as Harold's wife as one who should collaborate in everything he was to do. I may have imagined myself more competent or more capable than I was, but on the intellectual level, in meeting with people of substance, we often have the occasion to do, and in general, the life around him and the life that he was involved in the labor movement offered me that chance to participate and collaborate with him in all his activities. That is, sometimes I would do a little research for him. His title was the director of research director, so being an economist, professionally speaking, that was his background. He was a voice behind Philip Murray and often for the CIO as well. In any case, where there was an opportunity for me to have some contribution to make, on whatever small or insignificant level, I thought I was not throwing my education overboard for nothing at all. The fringe benefits of being in that world at that time in history were many and very rewarding. Men and women in public life, all through the Roosevelt administration, much of it emanating from Washington, but preferring then the very vital headquarters of the steel industry. I meant that we felt at least that we were in the hub of things. John Gunther, for instance, the author, did his Inside USA at that time. And the first thing he did when he came to Pittsburgh was to interview Harold. And one of his chapters begins with the death affair.
So you were a hostess for him?
That's right. That, too, in those days, that was not a derogatory term for a wife.
No. That's right.
To be the hostess and to offer the background in which all these little scenarios could be set. Well, I don't want to repeat myself. I think if you ask another question.
Okay. So that you were the hostess for him, and you also did you help him in his research?
Very little, because he had a team, and a very competent team of working for him. And it was just a question of aiding and abetting and whatever he did.
And I know that Harold has been interviewed, and so that a lot of that history, oral history,
for instance, just came across an old drawing that I don't know if this is much of Ben's job, but he himself did a lot of writing in those days, and practically all the important Nation, New Republic, Harper's, Reader's Digest, etc. Social Work Magazine, those titles. There was a lot of writing for publication, and on that level, too, I thought I had a small contribution to the issue.
Well, as I was going to say, he is going to be doing that, so if you don't want to go into that in any more depth, I'm sure
I don't want to
yes.
live out other people's lives. That goes right for my children as well.
Okay, speaking of children, Linda. So the children, could you just tell us a little bit about the children and when you had the children?
Well, I had a 10-year plan for the children.
Yeah, you had a plan.
For between the age, my ages of 25 to 35. And we have four children. I think that is wisely stated. I call that period all the way through until they have finished college and other additional degrees we might have had, the golden age of families. And in fact, by the time they went away, there was a little loosening of the side, and that's only natural. But in the period of time that we have, we saw all the influence that can be brought to bear on growing children. We felt that we give them all we considered important and valid, and we expanded, etc. And we had a marvelous rapport between the children and ourselves, so that I, speaking for myself, felt that those were very rewarding and happy years, because we felt something being built and nurtured and passing on to their generation, and they would be on their own and have to make decisions, major work for themselves.
Tell me about the names of the kids, and the sexes, and the spacing.
Yes, unfortunately, they really sound like a quartet of an English king. Charles, James, Edward.
Oh, my. Charles?
I don't know. This wasn't intentional, but that's the way. Our daughter's name is Ellen. First, I was a great lover of Eleanor Roosevelt, and my mother's name was Ellen. So somewhere in between she became Ellen.
They are following you
now? No, our major emphasis was, as far as their education and training for the future, our big point in offering them everything they wanted, if you could afford to do for them, we would, that they would make their own decisions as to what to become. Nobody needed to take over daddy's business. But that I said.
Okay, well, so that Charles is now living.
Well, they're all in their second careers.
They're all in second careers.
I think that's maybe the signal for the 70s and 80s, but in any case. First of all, they all went to folk school. Then the three boys went to Alderdice, and Ellen went to Ellis from Michigan. Before the magnet schools and all these special good things in public education, the boys were just at Alderdice at the time when there were some special staff schools. Sexual, I mean, that's better, and that's in the way. Right, Susan. Mm-hmm. And they did. So they got into excellent schools. The two older boys went to MIT. I say all this not because I think it's to our credit necessarily, but we may have had something to do with, in the first place, we were achievers. We wanted our children to be achievers. And I personally didn't think it was such a terrible thing to be a close to each other. To want the best for the children. So when they responded and were able to do just that, without any hassle at home, I would say on their own, totally on their own, because they made the grade. We were proud of them. And they did have some music on the side with things which they dabbled. Generously, and that seems to be a great deal of effort to the extent we have been speaking.
And was the social consciousness
of the family? Yes, I remember one or the other was very different experience in San Francisco. they couldn't help us. It was all around the house, and we met all these interesting people we brought around, and the children were part of the ongoing daily life. If it was someone for dinner, they were shoved off to some other place, even at the earliest
stage. Nice. Tell me, who were some of the people?
There was a philosopher from England by the name of, you know, later when I think of it, you can start to keep the name.
Okay.
There were the big people from Washington, the head of the National Labor Relations Board, or somebody from the labor. They were then important people. They were the early 40s. But at this time, I must inject the fact that for 2.5 years we spent our lives in Washington, D.C. In lieu of being drafted for the service, because he was out of certain age and had already two children, which was then the rule for being sent. In any case, Philip Murray insisted that Harold not be drafted, he would be more interested in the government in a civilian post. So we were in Washington. He was an assistant director of the steel division of the War Production Board. It was a key organization allocating materials for war production. He was the labor's representative on the board. Of course, we got our dollar a year for it. Actually, the checks didn't amount to that much. Mm-hmm. 1 year was 83 cents, and another year was 77 cents. But I have them framed, and I'm mighty proud of them. Life in Washington was exciting. It was during that time that we found out about the events, the horrendous, terrible events taking place in Europe in the Pacific. But actually, we were privy to that through Philip Murray. We heard it from General Marshall that the Jews were being massacred by the shoved under the rug, or generally kept out of, not publicly given to us, but we were very deeply moved by this information. At this time, too, I began my own personal mission to save my own private member of the family and bring her over here. I went to what now would seem unreal, because she being a female, all the laws didn't apply to her. When the rules and regulations called for such and such, we would become above the quota. And spouse. It didn't say spouse, it said wife. So it always referred to as male applicants. And I turned everything upside down. It was the highest people in government power. Well, these are people who knew me to deliver subjects. He was, I think, an assistant secretary of state. And others were. Oh, this is when we met Goldberg.
Arthur Goldberg?
Arthur Goldberg became a dear friend. He was then with the... In fact, we helped him get into the council for the CIA. Well, of course, you know what happened to him. Well, just dropping his name, I seem to imply that we had a very interesting life. Continues to be interesting now on another level with other kinds of people. And when we came back to Pittsburgh in 1944,
We were right back in our position at the union. But at this point, I think Harold better take up the new story. When we were, our profile was not that of labor, but suddenly being in industry, which to everybody seemed like a very, very special step to take for anyone who just had such a strong labor background. But not of labor, but as a professional.
Mm-hmm.
However, later years, maybe decades later, it became obvious that he probably did the very wisest thing. And I say here, not me, I should say Harold, but his decision was my wholehearted support. Back in the labor movement again, I'm sorry to skip back and forth, but one of the things I did personally, I remember, to organize and run a camp for the local, regional labor leaders, presidents of local unions, in Seals, in the somewhere in the mountains by Union Town, it was a CCC camp or something.
Yeah.
We took that over, and I was the librarian, the programmer, and brought interesting people in to lecture to the budding labor leaders. And
adults or children, too?
Hmm?
In camp, the children were adults.
No, adults. The labor leaders. Mm-hmm. They were local union presidents or other officials. This went on for 2 years. I had a great deal to do with it. Officially, I was not the head of it, obviously. I was not in the labor movement. I was an attendee. Yeah. However, that was something that I felt is my doing, my contribution. Now,
may I ask you, when you just backtrack a little bit, when you found out about through Philip Murray about what was going on, were you ever able to use any of the influence that you and Harold had to influence anybody that could?
Yes, specifically to make possible my cousin's.
But was it well known in official circles? I mean, was this?
No, I had to do all this in the background, and Harold gave me all the support he could, but I laid out the strategy. And it's a pretty cool meddling in higher circles. And with the lawyers, to try to prove that in this case, and when we have Rosie the Riveter and Francis Perkins as labor minister, what do you call him, secretary of labor,
mm-hmm.
that it's high time we held women in position of esteem, or rather give them equal rights. So I was an equal writer. Equal writer.
You were a feminist
then.
Way back then, huh?
I succeeded in this thing.
Yes, and you did get her over. Was there any effort to get this information so that more people would come, or was that just not politics then?
No, it was not within my domain.
It
was not my place to
that your family.
And I was exhausted enough doing that, and I did have my family to.
Yes, your family. But it couldn't be spread out because, I mean,
we were too small to settle on the to get involved in that kind of thing. And there were leaders of juries involved in working on it. Another interesting aspect of doing a limited amount of travel was possible. We met all the conventions wherever they were. And there too we met the people who came to address conventions, you know how that is. And because he was in such a high position and sort of a right-hand man, again, it was my hostess thing and my
participation that gave me all that benefit, things benefit. Again, I want to focus all this to Lena because I'd like to make something out of myself because that's why you're here.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
All this enriched my life, a great deal. And then when our life became, from another perspective, constructed or took on another aspect or speaking from another level, the interesting people or the, to us it seemed the people that mattered, were again from another walk of life or had other great attributes that we again continually like
and the children of course benefited from
yes because this was table conversation around the table and personally meeting certain ones and giving them through us an additional opening into various views of life.
May
I give you an interesting anecdote here? Yes. In fall school, our middle son, Jimmy, was very friendly with young Paul's stepson, Stevie Ross. They had their bar mitzvah at Sinai, 1 week apart. They exchanged visits on Devonshire Road and on Aylesboro Avenue. They were from 9 to 13 or 14 at that point. They fall school. One time, Jimmy was a guest at Falk, and he was asked by Leon or somebody, "What does your father do?" And Jimmy said, "He's a steel worker." And then Jimmy asked Stevie, "What does your Uncle Leon do?" He said, "He's a plumber." Now, I don't remember where at that time the Fox had any interest in some major plumbing enterprise or whatever it was, on a very high level, I'm sure. But Stevie probably wasn't suspicious. He just knew that Leon had something to do with plumbing.
That's
but I think the children knew more than they let on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
and we thought that was a good conversation.
Did you live on Alfred?
Yes. The major part of our child rearing years were on Alfred Avenue.
During the 40s, you know, touched in for the last time. On the beginning of Sinai, and you just touched on it again with the idea of the boys.
Tabiti came to visit us.
How did that move in?
First, we spent several months, almost 6 months, at the family hotel, looking for a house to buy. And then Ellen was born. So that was just the house that we were going to have already. And a very alert committee from Sinai came to visit us and try to tell us that this new sister or daughter organization, Congregation of the Little Stone, has a future and this is what we must all be affiliates, et cetera, et cetera. The line was perfect. We had no objection. We were looking for a place to go to be. And it had been a very, very happy marriage all these years.
And
as soon as I was able to free myself from the nitty-gritty of the concern for and care of the children, not that I didn't have household help, I had plenty, but the house came a couple.
Mm.
And so I found myself in a very, very advantageous position. So I started to take on small jobs for Sinai. Nothing earth-shaking, just what interested me at the time. And we supported everything. We attended a lot. and find out if Sima has it. Then later on, I took on other jobs that were more ongoing, and last year, but maybe I'll figure out of them. But never aspired to quote leadership. I well, now we're already in the 50s, in 1954, we began travel abroad. And then when all these other challenges came around, came to me personally, travel and all the goodies and free benefits that that brings, I didn't want to feel torn and let anyone down by not always rule of it.
No.
So that any serious commitment would have been kind of productive for my own good, and I guess I was a little selfish, but I gained a great deal from all our travels. So from 1954, you could not beat me at home. I fortunately had the love and cooperation from my parents, who along with the household help would either move in or supervise or something else, so that the children were, so the household went on. At the beginning, such travel was only in the summertime when we were either in camp or in some other kind of program. But I just didn't feel that I should ever let a good opportunity be to travel when it was not that common in the early 50s. Only very special people in the sciences who have to go to, you know, right after the war, who went to a convention for, I mean, I'm talking about the people in our group, who went to international conferences, or internationally minded people from either business or government.
Did you travel did you travel for pleasure? Was it for how?
It was all business-based, and it became our pleasure, total pleasure.
Yes. It was, but it was sort of business
necessity. Business necessity. Because, as I mentioned, the first product, the first business that Harold undertook, or took over, were the water rendering machines. Well, that took us around the world. Around. It was what everybody wanted in all of this. Developing countries, so underdeveloped countries. And there was a good bit of American money behind it. So, make a sale.
Anyway, was this also part of Europe's regeneration, Europe's recovery that you had to go travel through? Were you involved in any of the...
Well, yes, we were only 10 years away from the end of the war,
yeah,
but that was still going on.
So it's a recovery
program. I
know it
was a case in Greece, it was a case in Italy. Then, of course, the Orient and the
South been, Asian. Is there any place you haven't been? You've traveled every, is there any place?
During those trips that were all of business and pleasure as well, well, we would never made it to Russia, Egypt, or China. These three countries are the in countries, have been for some years now. Egypt, I made it much, much later on my own as pleasure from Israel to Egypt and back.
Yeah.
Russia, I'm looking for an appropriate framework.
Yes.
China, I can take it or leave.
But those are the only three countries.
And now, of course, so many years later, the one stamina and other family responsibilities now in terms not so much of raising them, but being there when they want you, or as being able to attend for all their many milestones. Travel has to be very carefully planned. So that we shouldn't miss anything.
No. In those years when you were traveling in the 50s, what percentage of time would you say that you were on?
We were abroad every year, sometimes twice.
And then eventually, did you take the children?
Yes, some of the ways I continued to feel as if I were collaborating. Now, first, you understand this is an old-fashioned concept.
Mm-hmm.
And the definition for collaboration with your husband and that kind of thing is from another point of view. And I'm not a bit embarrassed to admit it. It did a lot for our family. It was the only way one did things in those days. Unless you were, you know, one for breaking through, and I wasn't that forward. But to get back to our travels, Harold himself will admit, to admit that I was very important in all these fields and years abroad.
You actually sat in on the meetings?
Yes,
and
all of them. I, one time,